Hello, and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney. Before this week's episode, a few friendly reminders. New episodes drop every Thursday afternoon.
Opinions and views expressed in this show are not necessarily those of the Arts Asylum, Mutual Musicians Foundation, or KOJH 104.7.
If you have any questions, concerns, or suggestions, please contact us via email at couchchats@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at couchchats. And don't forget, that's couch with a K. Please also remember to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Bye.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show we have our friend Addie Dancy.
Hey guys.
Not Darcy,
Not Darcy.
Yeah. Dancy. Welcome to the show, Addie.
Thank you so much.
I've been really excited to be able to talk to you, essentially since you sort of came into the building with Faust all of, you know, those 2 or 3 years ago. I've just seen your picture pop up so many times in time hops where I'm like, you were on the green couch in the collab, you know, on this project or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah,
that just
like
yesterday,
the ghost that doesn't actually know, you know, like, I'm just like one that pops up.
So the first question I always kind of like to start with is, how the hell did you get here today? How do we know you and why are you sitting in the room today?
Hey, okay. So I started music directing with Zach Faust, who owns Faust Theater. I guess it's been 2 years at this point. Mm-hmm. My first show with them was Heathers, the musical, mm-hmm. in 2017. And that was just such a happenstance, like, meeting with the two of us. We have a mutual friend, Daniel Versheldon, who's done shows with us. Mm-hmm. And we had lunch one day.
Such a talented guy.
Absolutely. We just had a random lunch one day, and he's like, hey, I have this friend that's looking for a music director. Are you interested? And I was like, yeah, that sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. And so Zach and I met, and we've blossomed our friendship since then and done so many shows together. And so the reason I'm here today is to talk about the show I'm directing right now called Lizzie. Mm-hmm. It's a rock opera / musical, and Zach has very graciously given me the opportunity to direct and music direct this project that I'm like so incredibly passionate about, and I'm really grateful for
it's
that.
It's such a strong, like, show, and it's one that, like, a lot of people don't know, so there's a lot of buzz about just, like, what the hell is this thing? And I just keep telling people, listen, I've seen little sound bites, and I've heard things, and I think it was maybe yesterday, you guys were having a rehearsal or something in the theater during the day, and I was recording just a little part and sending to my people just to be like, look what happens here, because that's one of my favorite parts sort of about being the artistic director here, because I get to sort of sneak around and hear art happening all day long and try to stay out of people's way.
It's my favorite when rehearsals happen during the day for that reason, because we don't get to do that, you know, but like when you just hear live music coming from anywhere is like, you just, you know, it's like a shiny, go to it, you know, kind of thing.
Well, here's the thing.
Exactly.
What are those?
And it's one of the actual reasons, although it may seem, you know, annoying or something, from an outside perspective, it's actually why I love the Arts Asylum, is because during the day, that's when the most amount of people are trying to create at the same time. Mm-hmm. In the most, like, respectful way. You know, during the, like, at night, people are like, oh, well, there's a theater show happening, so I need to be a little bit quiet or something. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, during the day, everybody is just doing their art.
Yeah.
And they all just sort of blindly accept one another to say,
absolutely,
hey, I'm kind of loud over here, or I'm making smelly paint smells right there. So I'm very glad that you guys are here and creating during the day.
Oh, yeah.
And the theater was full of, like, haze yesterday, and I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, it's like walking into a haunted house. Yeah. That's totally the vibe I'm going for.
Which is something that you had sort of mentioned in that quick production meeting that we had a week ago that already seems like a month ago
about
everything that took place since then. So how did you get yourself into theater?
Into theater, period. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, open-ended question that opens other tangent conversations.
Yeah. I started doing theater when I was pretty young. I did some high school productions when I was like maybe, I think, 10 or 11, mm-hmm. and I went and did Children of Eden. That was one of my first musicals, and I did Bye Bye Birdie. And I definitely fell in love with the art form through
Andrew.
Where
did you do Children of Eden at?
Children of Eden, uh-huh. At Lee Summit High School when I was like 10 years old, I think.
Was that like in 2004?
Ah! Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Great.
I think 2005.
Corey just realized you guys have done a show together.
No. I always helped Ben Martin, like, on all of his musicals, and then I was I was the lead Cappy critic from my high school, and so I think...
What?
I reviewed your Children of Eden at some point.
You must have really, been drawn to the mouse.
I always enjoyed, like, that was really one of the luxuries that sort of happened, because I'm very shy, not really. And so I went and I helped Ben Martin and Mike Beam at Raymore, you know, Ray Peck, a lot during my high school
career.
So I'm so glad that...
That's so funny. What
you were a part of it. I was like...
Crazy connection.
Because I knew that you grew up in Lee Summit, so...
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And...
I'm a Lee Summit North kid, so...
What?! Mm-hmm. How did I not know that?
See? Told you. Well,
oh my gosh,
you're
finding all these interesting things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's hilarious. I think that was Little Shop of Horrors. See how easy it is to tangent?
Wow.
Little Shop of Horrors that Faust did here, and all the picture is all of these people in Lee Summit North high school jackets. And I remember when they all were coming in for that rehearsal, I was like, I know
Wait a second.
Yeah, so that's great. So around 10, you kind of started to play in high school theater shows.
Right, yeah. And I didn't do a bunch of theater because I started getting into... I was a big space nerd. I thought for a really long time I was going to be an astronaut. and so I kind of walked away from that field for a little bit. And then... I did do Shakespeare camps here in KC with Heart of America, and I got back into it in my junior year of high school and did 9 to 5, and my theater director took a chance on me even though I hadn't done it before, and then I got a lead in my senior year doing White Christmas, and then I started...
I love that musical.
It's great.
I want to do it in July so bad. Like, over 4th of July, like, and just do that show so bad.
It's cute. It's definitely cute. Beautiful music.
I mean,
can't go wrong with Irving Berlin,
the
you
book
know?
Is goofy as all get out, but that music is stunning.
Yeah. You're like, wait, how did they fall in love?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Yeah. But I started playing pit orchestras. It was really... the thing that got me into theater and becoming a theater person. And that's definitely where one of my passions is in life is I play cello. That's what I actually do for a living. And so,
you always have that on your back.
Everywhere yeah.
You go, you bring that in.
my big bowling pin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a permanent
fixture.
It's definitely
an accessory of yours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this last summer you music directed Adam's Family with Faust out at Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park.
Yes.
And how was that? Was that kind of one of your bigger musical direction experiences?
Definitely. It was huge. I've never worked with that many people before in my life. And it was definitely a challenge. But, I mean, the thing about Theater in the Park is that everybody's there on their own time. And so everybody wants to be there. And that was hard for me in some senses because I felt that... I didn't want to take up too much of people's time, and I did worry that it was a lot of time for not a lot of reward, but people enjoyed it so
because
much.
Because the so many performances, or what do you mean?
Yeah, like, they're putting so much of their own time into it, and they're not getting paid, you know, and I just, that kind of hurt my heart a little bit, because I want people to be... compensated for the time that they put in.
Sure.
But overall, I was just really grateful to have that opportunity and to work with that big of an orchestra and that big of a cast.
You had all those people at your command. It was so cool.
Yeah, it was
Did
fun.
You have to assemble your own orchestra completely?
Yeah, definitely. And it's trickier finding people who will do it for free, but the people I got, they were such amazing people, and I'm really happy that they all said yes.
That's one of my favorite parts, actually, about community theater in general, is that, like, you have that kind of guilt of, like, we're all doing this for free, but then it's, like, this...
But we're all
you
doing
You want to be there. You know what I mean? Like, you know that you want to be there, and it's sometimes... And I know that, you know, when you get into, like, you're an equity actor or something, there are roles you have to take just to, like, keep your hours, you know? And so you don't know... But, like, when you really want to do something and you go out of your way, it's sometimes it's a totally different kind of magical experience.
Mm.
I love it.
Absolutely. absolutely.
You know?
And that's how you know people really want to be absolutely. There and that they're invested in. And that's...
Well, and it also provides an opportunity for people who maybe don't want to make theater their career but still love it. You know, where you're just like, I am actually an attorney, but I love that too, but I want to sing and I'm good at it, so let's play, you know?
Right.
Let me have fun. I'm sure being a lawyer is fun. That's probably not accurate. I'm from 13 generations of lawyers, so I should know that that's probably not that fun. Some
and
people
the,
do
you
fun.
Know, the Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park, I've done a few shows out there. The thing I love about it, truthfully, is when you hit that perfect spot in the middle of the night and there's this beautiful music mm-hmm. coming out of a stage and there's 1,000 people, you know, just all breathing and living.
And moon,
yeah, and
go.
Sometimes people are asleep, and sometimes people are still eating their fried chicken. But you're all there together watching these group of volunteers, to your point, just create some good
shit.
Like, I know that it's sometimes difficult to step away from projects that you work on, but everything I've done out there, I have been so... proud of the work that shows up, because they have these designers and these teams and these great music directors who come in and just do it.
Yeah.
And we're all just doing it for a reason.
Well, an outdoor theater has like a whole other, like you have, you know, theater has all of its own and what's going to happen tonight kind of, you know, aspect. But then it's
how
like,
how much am I
going to
sweat?
And is it
going to
rain? Or is it going to be a tornado?
On our final dress of like Children of Eden.
What?
It's mm-hmm. snowed mm-hmm. at our final dress of Children of Eden.
What the hell?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was insane.
Right.
Yeah.
And then like
in
and then,
what, like May?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was that year, and I think
and
it
did
it
ruin First Fridays of May that year too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
People were literally out there in like coats and parkas mm-hmm. and shit, like watching opening night of Children of Eden.
Wow.
I was wrapped up in a blanket with your mom when we
with
came.
Pirates.
I was like, okay, hold on.
I get
it's
to
cold.
Do what we're doing,
yep.
you know.
And it's really difficult to sell summer theater sometimes when there's snow on.
Yeah. Two conflicting messages. Well,
right.
It's like White Christmas in July.
Yeah. I be careful. I may manifest us doing White Christmas
oh,
out there. Be careful.
I'll keep my eye out for
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what drew you to working with Zach? I know that you had a meeting with him, but why were you like, this is someone I want to hitch my wagon to? Because I do think that your little organization and your group are full with very strong, like, artist people. Like, they're all working, they're all doing as professional, you know, as you can, and no one is, like, blinking an eye. They're all, like, you almost, like, have that, what's the story that I, like, or the conversations I have with so many people? They wish that they could bottle up your guys' energy, because we all forget. Like, as you get older, you start to make other priorities with that true, let's just get together and put on a show kind of feeling is something that drew me to Zach. So I'm sort of just wanting to learn what drew you to Zach.
Yeah.
Shout out to Zach.
Hey, Zach, how you doing? Yeah. Zach is a vibrant human being. He's got absolutely brilliant. And I think he's got such an eye for theater that I don't think all people have. I think a lot of people have, but he knows how to... get a group of people together, vibing and ready for exactly what he wants them to do. And I think also he's hilarious. And I think it's really important to me to work with people that I just enjoy being around and I enjoy having fun with. And I think I picked up from almost our first meeting, which was like in a coffee shop in Union Station, and he was just laying out all of these ideas for me, and I was like, wow, this guy has a passion for what he's doing, mm-hmm. and the passion, I think, is really what draws me in.
Did you know falsettos before you started working on it with him?
Nope.
Yeah.
We went and saw it together. He took me to a theater that was showing it, like, 2 years ago, there was like a random movie theater showing the Broadway production.
Mm-hmm.
The Broadway revival.
Nights. I love those. We try to attend as many of those.
It's awesome.
It's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and by the end of it, like, I think Zach and I were like sobbing on top of each other, like just completely bawling. And that show was instantly something that I knew I wanted to be a part of.
I loved that you guys did that show so much. I just got to be a fraction of a part of that creation, and I just, it was so, I loved it every time I was in that room. I loved that show.
And we loved having you. Thank you.
It was a great show, yeah.
That's definitely one of our heart pieces.
Yeah. I know how Zach feels about that. But you know, I mean, that show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You created it your way, and the variables made it sort of have to be directed amongst yourselves, which is a hell of a piece to try to take on, you know,
in
kind of the round with sets changing. Like, that was just last summer. I mean, don't forget that we were making that world a year ago.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me to think that was a year ago.
And so those are those things, like, it's just like, I feel we all grow up in the most professional ways on accident in a year. When you look back and you're like, yeah, well, that's what we were going through a year ago, and those obstacles seem like nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm very glad that you were a part of that. Like, that entire ensemble cast, all of you.
Yeah, it was great.
Pretty damn strong.
Thank you.
That was, I think that was my month of, like, sad gay plays.
It's true.
Like, I was, like, falsettos and, like, torch song and all these things. And I just remember that my parents are now listeners, so welcome to the fives and tens.
Oh, they listen every week.
And I just remember having a conversation with them, and, like, my dad or something said, is this another one, you know, one
of those plays?
What are we in for tonight? And I was like, well,
welcome to June.
Welcome to June.
It's sad.
Yeah.
There's no mother figure really in this or whatever. It's just, oh, there is Trina, but not like Torch Song.
Yeah.
So what are your goals for the next 10 years? Where do you see yourself? I know, it's welcome to the tangents, but.
Wow, that's a very loaded and intense question for me right now.
But those are those things, is I feel like in some aspect, if you prep too much, I'm someone who loves off the cuff answers when it comes to these things. And you can just be like, I don't know, girl. I'm just trying to figure it out. But I'd love to be, I just love to kind of know where your mind is going.
Well, to be honest, I'm at a point in my life where I had zero idea that this is where I would be a year ago. Mm-hmm. And everything in my life has changed over the last 6 months. And, you know, what I think my goal is for the next 10 years is to not plan as much.
Mm-hmm.
Is that within your wheelhouse to not plan, or is that?
That's very hard for me.
Yeah, right, sure.
I'm a chronic planner at this point. Like, I like to stay organized, and I like to know what's going to happen. But you don't know what's going to happen, and what I want to pursue is feelings and. I guess I want to know that in each part of my life, wherever I go, that I'm within my alignment. That's really what I'm going for right now, is just to know that whatever opportunities arise, I will take them based on what I know to be true of myself and what I want to
do. Do you adjust your alignment often, or do you sort of feel like you have a goal set that you are fitting opportunities into, if that makes sense?
I think I'm constantly adjusting my alignment. I try to be more introspective about what's going on in my life, because I want to make sure that I'm not getting stuck anywhere. And so right now I'm wanting to pursue joy, and I want to pursue passion and knowledge. And so, like, this project, for instance, has been completely within all of that alignment, because I'm finding so much joy, and I'm getting to tap into everything that I love to do with this. So that's kind of my goal for the next 10 years, is just to see where life takes me, but also to do it in a way that is aligned with my values.
I'm really excited. You had mentioned sort of, you know, this project with Lizzie, and as I said, I'm so glad that it is almost, well, it's a female-based cast, and then a female music director, and I believe you may only have one male in the room with you. Is that Randy?
Is it just Alex?
Randy and Alex?
We've got Randy, Alex, and then we have two male bandmates, too.
But But from a kind of staff side, I guess spouse, I guess so it's a lot more even. But your internal core is definitely female-based, which was something that a year or so ago, whenever this conversation was starting, that was something you were very passionate about.
Yes.
And Faust was too. Faust was so rooting for this project because of the female strength aspect of it.
I love
While holding a hatchet.
Yeah, and there's a lot to that. And I think, of course, I am passionate about feminism and women's rights. But what I think is important to note about this process and this story is that this is not just a cool story about a sensationalized murderer.
Right.
This is a story about somebody who had no rights in her time and only had a couple of options. And frankly, I think she picked the best one for her to continue her survival. And that's, I think, the theme of that show has resonated with every woman that I've worked with in this cast and in this crew. And they are just, they're bringing that to light more than anything.
Is that what you want people to take away from it after they see it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Can I go into the reasoning behind that?
Yeah. You can please. Yeah. Deep.
So I have a passion not only for women's rights, but the history of women's rights. And in 1848, a woman named Elizabeth Cady Stanton was, she formed one of the first meetings about women's rights. And at that time, in 1848, women were considered what's called civilly dead. That was the verbiage they used. They were not allowed to own property. They were not allowed to keep their children in a divorce. They were not allowed to have their own money, even if they worked for it. They were not allowed to do so many things that we take for granted.
Did that happen, or was that just what it always was and it was given that label?
No, it was all, I mean, in my research, ironically, you and I were having a conversation last night about this very thing.
Literally at 11 o'clock last night, we were having a discussion about these sort of things.
Because Iowa made a very historic Supreme Court decision yesterday, and Iowa...
That they are allowing...
transgendered gender reassignments surgery to be paid for by Medicaid.
Iowa always tends to be this reaction.
That's the thing. You have this reaction. But the reality is Iowa is strangely progressive and they have a very, very specific history that ties into...
They were one of the first Midwest states that allowed for same-sex marriage.
But they were also... In Iowa was the very first state that allowed women to own property, the very first state that allowed women to have custody of their own children, the very first, like, it was a free slave state. Like, a lot of things where you're just like, you know, you think, you know, Iowa, and you're like, well, Iowa. And so, you know, also, I hope everyone's safe in Iowa because they're underwater right now, but like, but you just don't think of them as being that sort of thing, but it's actually an incredibly progressive state. But I was looking at those sorts of facts, and it was all law. It was law. Women were property, you know?
Yeah,
they were
essentially.
Paid for with dowries and, you know, all of
given away.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so if you...
What did you call that?
Civilly dead.
Civilly dead.
Yeah.
Do you know when that phrase was coined?
I think it was at that summit in 1848 in Seneca Falls. Yeah.
Wow.
It was... So, kind of piggybacking on that... Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton ended up doing a lot more in that kind of 50-year time period until Lizzie Borden came around. Lizzie Borden, if you look at her history, so for those of you who don't know, Lizzie Borden was sexually abused by her father. She was not given an allowance, not given an education. And she was not allowed to participate in social events. Therefore, she was unmarriable in the ideals of that society. She was uneducated. She had no money. She owned one dress. And her father was perfectly well-meaned. Mm-hmm. He was not necessarily poor, but he kept his daughters in their place. Mm-hmm. I did that in air quotes. and... What I have seen and what I have thought to myself is that Lizzie Borden had four options to her life. And one of them and trigger warning, was to kill herself and get out of her situation, which she considers in this show. One of the other options would be to leave and to become homeless.
To be less than what she was, which is unimaginable, but yet still
an
option.
And then another option would be to try and find work, but most likely end up homeless, diseased at that time with no prospects. And the fourth option was to kill him.
Was to hack them all.
Was to hack them all.
What's the poem or something?
Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, gave her father 41. Numbers are not.
And I think
the
numbers are not accurate. But
sensationalized.
I think also that there's a strange, like, picture in your head that Lizzie Borden was a child, and she was not. She was 32.
Yeah, 32 years old! Not,
know, where you're, like, dealing with a quote, you know, big air quotes again, spinster, of, like, I'm trapped in my father's house.
It just came out about this, too, that was wretched and lesbianism and all of this.
I was so mad about that movie. That one was with Kristen Stewart.
First, yeah, I was like, what?
They portrayed it as, okay, Bridget is the maid of the story, who they call Maggie, and that's played by Kristen Stewart. I forget the actress's name who played Lizzie, but they made it seem like they had a love interest and that Lizzie had all of this wealth and stuff, and it was stupid. And then the one with Christina Ricci, they made it look like she seduced her father. And I was like, one, gross. Two, why would you portray it like that? Like, I think people...
it's easy to
feminize women. And people are obsessed.
Well, you couldn't just have been fed up as a woman. You had to have had some horrible, extraneous reason why you would do this. And it couldn't just be, well, what other options did I have? You know, it didn't... I mean, as you said, obviously murder is the...
the last resort.
The most dramatic one, but all the other options seem like suicide to her anyway.
Right.
Whether she killed herself or went out on her own or whatever, that she probably was going to die anyway.
Right. However, I don't necessarily think that she made that decision as consciously as she could have.
But we get to study that and assume, you know, that hopefully that went through her head at some point. Right.
That's how I see it. I do believe that even though she wasn't given an education and given those things, I do think that Lizzie was more resourceful than we give her credit for, too. I think she did know a lot more about the world. She wanted to know, but she just was not given the means.
Do you identify with Lizzie?
I think part of me does. I don't necessarily identify with the desire to murder or to kill, but I think if I were in her spot, I would hope that I would have the same amount of bravery in my life that she had.
Right. Well, and I think that that's, you know, it's an interesting, I mean, that in and of itself is kind of a topic in feminism. I know that, you know, like, strange correlation. I have not seen it yet, but I've heard that it's, Lizzie's villainized in that same way because it's easier as, like, Lorena Bobbitt. And now we're getting that full story. And, you know, they've just come out with that documentary and, like, that kind of thing of, like, she's always just been a crazy person in my... I mean, I remember when it happened. You were probably not born yet.
Yeah.
Like, I remember. And, like, the levels that people went to villainize this woman who's in this horribly abusive situation. And, again, saw no other out and was like... I'm going to take care of this
problem.
Also, with a hacking situation, you know, where you're just like that, when you are put in that position where you, it's fight or flight, you know, kind of thing. And a lot of people see that as their option. And it's not necessarily a rational one, but I think that it's what happens to women. You're instantly the crazy person as opposed to, well, let's look at all the things that led to this, and you know, and
well,
realize.
If you as a woman stay crazy, then you're manageable.
Right. Yep.
And then, you know, and that's societal, and that's a fucking shitty ass conversation, which we'll be having here soon again as we get into presidential elections and stuff coming up. The conversations, you know,
Absolutely.
with all 82 current Democrats.
Yeah, all 70 million of them, basically. Jeez.
Coming out the woodwork.
A question that I hate asking, but I always love to ask, what is your next project after this?
Okay, so my next project is more music-related than it is theater-related. I will be performing with my great friend, Michaela Patillo, who's drumming for this show.
Cool.
She is also a singer-songwriter, and I'm in her band called Mickey P and the Swallowtails, and we'll be going on tour in August.
This is the official announcement of the tour.
Yeah, and we're playing some shows that I'm not sure if I can tell you. Oh, no, I can tell you. We're playing at Boulevardia over the summer, and that's... We're going to be in the studio recording an album, so be ready for some new music.
Yeah.
I was just going to sit here and try and convince you to do Superstar with us, but then you're going to go on tour.
Hit me up.
Superstar's fun. Yeah, because we want a female band and all that.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Oh, my. That would be so fun. Mm-hmm. Wow, how unique. You don't usually see that in Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm.
You should speak... whenever Kyle gets back in town, you should definitely try and steal 5 minutes of his brain.
I will.
Yeah. Even if we need to, like, put you two in a room together for 5 minutes.
And Aaron, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Aaron Bates, our music director, she's some sort. I don't... It's watching the two of them work has just been this, like... Okay, like I'm in the presence of greatness.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah,
and the most humble, normal human beings that you could possibly meet, where they have no idea how they're just like. Okay.
Or that I also allow them both to be special because I never want to assume that all music directors need to be able to transpose in real time.
Right.
On the set and be able to almost like say give me 10 minutes and like change orchestrations around which is, you know, she's just sort of that like savant in that way.
Yeah.
And it just happened in real time. She was like, hold on, let me just mess with something just really quick. And that the music section of like musicals is the one that I'm the most removed from because I don't understand always everything that can be done with music. You know, you see a staff, but everything in between there is what's possible.
Yeah.
And the musical theater, like, music vernacular, it's fucking hard.
It is
not easy stuff. And it's another language that I think takes people a long time to learn. Because, you know, you've got... It's very fast-paced, and so anybody who can do that for musical theater, I'm impressed by.
It was amazing. I mean, and she sort of, you know, she had some preparation because we knew going into casting that we did not want to look at anyone as a stereotypical, you know, cast. Like, we saw women for the priests and you know, women for Jesus and all of this kind of stuff.
We had an open casting room, which was awesome.
I love that.
So she kind of knew she was going to have to, you know, change octaves and that kind of, you know, she sort of had that prep. But watching it happen in real time was, I'm excited about the entire process, but I'm very interested to see how the story is going to change with a white Judas and a black Jesus. I think that's going to be very, very, because we're not necessarily playing to the religious portion of Jesus Christ Superstar. We're looking at him as a man, you know, kind of thing. And so
he's
how that feels in this setting and in this story is going to be very, very fascinating to watch. I'm very excited about
that
the process.
Wow, that is really exciting.
But I'm super stoked about the fact that Aaron wants to find as many female portions of the orchestra as she can.
Because she wants that pulse there, too.
Yeah. And they'll be part of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's going to be immersive.
I remember, I think I came up to you, Tangent, after Adam's Family, and I was just like, there was a moment where I was just watching you conduct.
Aww.
I love watching strong conductors, like, own a room.
Yeah.
I just think that power is so, like, that's what you're supposed to be doing. But it shows so often how I feel people don't. Is, you know, when you just see all of those eyes and you're all working in tandem and you're all creating. And yeah, I watched you. I think I told you that and I told Zach too. I was like, your show was lovely, but like watching Addie fuck that orchestra is so fun for me. And so I'm excited to see you do it up in this room, you know, too.
Thank you.
All of that.
Yes. And I won't be conducting.
But I know that that's your brain and I know that that's your want. And I know that there's often times that if I could music direct, I always wonder sometimes what my shows would be because I wouldn't have to split my brain and my time to someone else, I would just know 100% of the show that I was in control of sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think that that's probably exciting and not.
And exciting and daunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely been a unique experience because this is my first time directing just as a stage director. And I, A, did not know how much I would like it. And B, I didn't...
It's the good Kool-Aid, let me tell you.
It's the good Kool-Aid, yeah. And in combination with music. And I think, frankly, I think this show kind of requires that.
Sure.
Because it is an all-immersive.
It's just music, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I have really loved diving into every aspect of it, and knowing the music so well has helped me to see what I want visually out of this show too. And it's just been such a unique experience for me, and I've just enjoyed it so much. I've been kind of high on it. It's been so fun. And oh, let me tell you.
And you're in your marathon right now. Yes. Like, you,
as you can tell, I'm like...
I can't wait to see it. Me and my husband and my parents are coming Thursday, the day that this episode airs. So we'll be here on opening night, which I'm super
excited about.
You're coming Thursday as well?
Mm-hmm.
Great!
Is we should talk. Excited about it. Yeah, she's very excited about it.
And I'm telling everyone... just to come and experience something that I don't think some people have experienced in a while, from what I've been able to sort of see and hear and feel through it. Because mostly because there are people who don't know the music at all. So come do that.
And it's really fun music. The music is. Because I know nothing about the show. I guess I don't know. Is it like a la a true opera where I do know the entire show because I know the music? Or are there, like, scene breaks?
There are a couple of scene breaks, but everything is actually on the cast recording.
Okay.
So, but I mean, it's rock. It's head-banging, awesome stuff.
Which is so amazing when you put women in those sort of, like, head-banging places.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's been such a blast getting that together. And it's been fun for all of us, I think, like... The cast of women that I somehow managed to sign on to this endeavor has just been so incredible to work with. And they have invested just as much of their love and their passion into it. And you can tell that not only do they love this music, but they love the story. And I'm floored by how amazing they are.
I was having an interview where someone thought... that you all, and not that you're not professional, it's such the weirdest backhanded compliment. Someone was in this space and they were doing something and they heard you all singing in the collab and they were like, oh my god, what Broadway touring show is in there working right now?
Wowie.
But I always feel so cautious about saying those things because A, like, that makes you give, like, spatial relation that people are listening to you all the time, and B, like, you do have that quality. So I never wanted to also sound like, oh, well, because you're not Broadway, you're not supposed to sound that way. But these people were like, where can I go see that, because that sound is coming out of the walls. And I'm like, you can. Mm-hmm. Here at the Arts
Here
Society,
we are.
Right. March
Come
21st
see.
And the 24th. Yeah. Live performances. and make sure that you catch this show, my people, before we go into the sort of interview actual section of this, because we have our standard actors questions that we like to ask. So, you're granted 3 wishes. What are they?
3 wishes?
Yeah. Standard genie
Standard
rules.
Genie rules apply.
Standard, so I can't wish for more wishes.
And you can't bring people back from the dead.
Can't be, okay. 3 wishes, dang. I wish I could go scuba diving. Okay. That's what I want to do. Okay, that's number 1. Mm-hmm. Number 2, I wish the whole world would go vegan.
Fun.
Number 3, I hope... I wish that we would get our shit together before the climate eats us up. Those are my 3 wishes.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true scientist.
I know. She's like, I want to scuba dive, I want everyone to be healthy, and the world is dying.
And let's get it! Can I have the core we respect? Well, I can't bring anybody back from the dead.
Alex is a certified scuba diver, if you want to sit at the tech table.
How the heck is he so cool? He, like, gets all my Star Trek references. And
he's a weirdo.
He's
Which
awesome.
The reason why House Chats was started is because you can often sit next to someone in a room for an entire tech schedule and never once know that they're a certified scuba diver.
That's right.
Because that conversation never came up.
Except yeah. I know that Alex was a juggler.
He was a juggler. Yeah. He was. That's actually how we met. Because he put it on. He put it on his application. I was managing the store of knowledge. May she rest in peace. that was like a national chain, but it was associated with like whatever your local public television. So like ours was KCPT Store of Knowledge. Sort of like, I think that at that same time there was the Discovery Channel store or whatever, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh,
and he put it on
so
his
cool.
application, and I was like, this guy put juggling on his application. Like, let's bring him in and see what kind of weirdo he was. And then I was his boss. So, yeah, that's a thing. Alex has a lot of weird things. He also was stabbed through the arm by a three-toed sloth. In the Amazon River.
Who is this guy?
I know. One
Alex
day,
Barry.
And on
yeah,
his,
Alex will get his
will,
own couch.
Yeah, he's, when we have our anniversary of his madness, which now is kind of also, he's not okay, but he is okay. right now.
Alex
it'll
is
be,
doing fine.
Alex is, yeah, he'll be recovering after this bout of antibiotics. Is
oh,
over.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll have him on and talk mm-hmm. about all of his weird things. It'll be interesting if I learn something.
Yeah.
You almost should, like, not interview him. You should just have to
I
listen.
Should be in the room. I should just close my mouth.
Okay. Yeah.
That's fair. I will. I'll just, and maybe I will. There are times that I learn things still after 20 years.
I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello, mm-hmm. It's your question.
Yes, all right. Let's see. So you are a new addition to the crayon box.
The
what
crayon
color
box.
Are you and why?
Ooh, okay, okay. Let me think on this for just a moment.
Mm-hmm. By the way, catch Lizzie at the Arts Asylum.
Hey!
7:30 performances, mm-hmm. And then 2 o'clock on Sunday. As well.
Mm-hmm.
We have 7:30 shows on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and a 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday.
Yes.
Tickets can be
purchased.
This is
like your sexy radio voice.
Yes. This is my this yes. is my moment for Addie to be able to think about her answer.
We don't just want to go do do.
No, because we don't own the rights to that song.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
well good. You only got 15 seconds.
And Alex Zeckler's got like
I know.
Cancer and
sad.
Dying or something.
Like stage 4 something.
Pancreatic cancer.
Pancreatic. Oof.
Oh.
That is so sad. Alex Trebek is part of everyone's life, I feel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
crayon
color.
Shrouded in death.
The first color that came to mind, I think I would be a sunset pink orange.
Oh,
I think that's me.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like a layered? Like a swirl? Or like it's all one color?
All one color.
Cool.
Like the brightest pinky orange you can possibly
mm-hmm.
imagine. I think that's me.
Mm-hmm. All right. I love that color.
That's
a good one.
Me
really
too.
Good.
That's a good one.
Thanks. I wish I had a better name for
no,
it.
No,
like,
that is perfect. What is something you were told you could never do or do well that you are currently in the process of accomplishing?
Be a professional cellist. Yeah.
Cool.
Obviously, I've had a lot of support throughout my life, but I had a certain teacher basically tell me I could never be a professional cellist. And so I said, fuck you, I'm doing it anyways.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did that inspire you at all to prove that particular person wrong ever? Or is that just kind of a result of it?
I think, I didn't feel that I wanted to prove myself to him. I felt more that I just wanted to be rid of his presence. And I think because my life ended up without that person,
mm-hmm.
My brain was allowed to relax and get rid of all of the shit that he put in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm at this point where I was allowed to explore that idea again and all of a sudden getting gigs and actually doing it. So,
do you get to do art 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, so lucky.
Isn't that baller? Like, isn't that so fun?
Yeah.
Cool?
Yeah, including teaching music.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But your day is not filled with punching the clock, doing some BS somewhere. Mm-hmm. You get to sort of...
I get to do music.
Yeah.
And art all day.
So you are living
day.
Proof that it is possible to be a working artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Which,
I never really
which is something that we
about
that. Talk about sometimes, Courtney and I have had to sit and essentially like when high schools come and do like a job fair a kind of, but we participate in some mock job fairs, and we are there as the arts asylum, and people will come up to us and say, oh yeah, well, I can't do that. You know, there is no, you can't make a living
in the arts. Draw, but I'm going to be a doctor, because that's where
the doctors were the money's
in. Yeah.
And then we're like, well, do you like to draw, but you love comic books? Maybe you could draw a comic, you know, and like watching their little brains go, oh, it's not just about standing on stage or painting or whatever.
Wait a second, I can pursue my joy? Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
But the more that, I always tell them, the more of us that show that you can make a living will only make it easier for us and them.
Yeah. Yes.
To make a living. Because eventually you'll be like, well, there's a lot of people who are artists who are making a living.
Yeah.
So maybe it is possible.
Maybe it's possible.
And yeah, acknowledging that like every job, no matter what it is, whether you love it or not, is going to have a shitty day. Like you're going to have a super, and as a doctor, you might have more.
Just like real shitty days.
Really, really terrible days. But at the end of the day, if I have a terrible day, which they come, it's doing something I love. I don't have to be like, if this was a horribly shitty day and I hate everything that I'm doing and I don't care about it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's so status quo. People are just like, we have to do this because it's just our job. And I'm like, but don't you want it to be your life? Like, don't you want it to be your work?
I get to take an hour out every week and talk to a fellow artist because of my job. Mm-hmm. I get to.
How cool is that?
It lands in my schedule. I get to say, I can't do anything else because I get to talk to an artist.
Yeah.
I just did that.
Well, and also kind of piggybacking on what you were saying is that, like, a shitty day at your dream job should be something that you would take over a good day on any other job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how I feel about it.
And art, you know, in and of itself has its own way of, for artists, I guess maybe there are people who don't have this, but, like, no matter how crappy the day, there's always, like, the moment of art that takes place that you're just like, that's why I do it.
And that's why we worked for 8 hours on this shit, you know?
Exactly.
Like,
and what's cool about today is, like, I've had already, like, two really cool moments, but, like, this one's pretty cool, too. Like, you, like, it's just, it's getting better. Like, I'm just like, no offense meeting before me, but, like, this one is really
cool. Like, right? Yeah, no, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
So, before the next thing, tell the difference between Dancy and Darcy.
Yes. So, okay, my family disagrees with me, but I have this theory that Dancy actually came from Darcy. Mm-hmm. And
the R was just too long.
That when we immigrated, somebody wrote it incorrectly. That's my theory. Because, I mean, Dancy is technically an English name. But how many times have you ever met anybody with the last name of Dancy?
It's true.
You hear Darcy all the time.
Were you made fun of, like, are you a dancer? Do you dance all the time?
Actually, no.
That would have been the first kindergarten question I would have asked. Like, do you like to dance?
Do you like to dance? Yeah, that's, it's weird. I get more made fun of for my first name than for my last name.
Is it the two E's?
It's the two E's. I get a D, A D. I've gotten Andy, Andre, Adi, Ade.
I think it should be Ade Danse.
Ade Danse.
That's from now on.
Yeah, exactly.
Henceforth on the couch. Henceforth. Adi Danse.
Ade Danse.
Ade Danse. Adele Nazim, isn't that?
Adele Nazim.
Yeah.
Stupid John Travolta.
Oh, man.
And he said it Adele with such certainty. That was
Idina
the
problem. Menzel Adele.
Let it go by Adele Dazzy. Whatever. Go ahead. The question as we navigate this beautiful moment.
All right. Well, because sort of on that same note, what's the closest thing to real magic?
Wow. The closest thing to real magic. Music. Good musical moments. Not all music, I don't think so, but like an intentioned, well-thought moment that people have put their love into in music.
I have a question. I have another one of my standard questions, but that makes me want to ask you a question.
Okay.
And it's two parts. A, do you believe life should be underscored?
Ooh, well, I have to ask you, do you think your life is underscored?
It always is.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Between the music in my head and the general thing that happens around me, my life always. And I also believe that people, and just their basic walking, have a pace, that's a true. Rhythm. Like, I will walk down the street and I will start to bop or move to how I think the song in their head.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
Starting around with Corey is the best because sometimes inadvertently he will start like boop, 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 boop. Like, he'll start like it's not navigating like what he thinks somebody's walking towards.
Totally! Yeah. That's kind of on that note, my friend Michaela and I, who's the drummer, she's like my musical muse. Sometimes we'll be like, oh man, I'm craving pancakes. I'll be like, pancakes. Yeah. Yeah. We're eating pancakes. Uh-huh. Then she drops a beat.
That's not trademarked by the Arts of Sound.
And then she'll like drop a beat and then we'll just like...
My husband and I do that.
Really?
Like, we'll create that shit. Yeah. We always put on shower shows. Sorry, Mom and Dad. But we're always just like, imagine the shower curtain is like the curtain. And we're like, we thought that we should have like a web series of our like... shower shows.
You should totally do that.
100%.
We have the equipment right here.
I gotta figure out and how to blurb out certain parts of my body.
Oh, sure. Oh, you mean like a video series. Yeah, that's different.
I'm gonna have to get a sponsored shower. Mm-hmm. You know, because it needs to look good. And,
right, yeah.
You know. Oh, you should have it be like a shower with a wall over the top so we just like see your face. And no problem. You can build that.
Like easy.
Why don't you write the theme song?
You'll be like the guy from Home Improvement. We'll only ever see this much of you. Al.
Shower. Yeah.
There we go. Do you then find it difficult to sometimes hear bad music out in the world? Do you find yourself not being able to enjoy things because you're just like, that music is so wrong or jarring?
No. I used to be like that. But at this point, what I have come to realize is that I don't think that you can categorize music into good and bad. Because everything is subjective, and I think the only true quote-unquote bad music is music that doesn't have love behind it. And that's evident, and in that case, I'm like, nah, I don't need anything in that. But, like, I think if an artist or anybody out there is putting intention and love and passion into their art... Mm-hmm. It's good to somebody, even mm-hmm. if it's not good to me.
That's mm-hmm. a little bit about why I asked that, is because I wouldn't say prudish, but respectful of my craft. And so sometimes it is difficult for me, or was more difficult, for me to go out and not hold everything to a certain standard that I thought that my art should be at. And my swing really has taken place, I would say, in the last like year or so, mm-hmm. to really start to realize that just because here... is where I see it. This may be the best thing you have ever seen or experienced. And I don't mean by like,
Or done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so why am I taking away your joyous moment just because I'm pretentious somehow?
I love that outlook.
Yeah. And so I have found myself falling into some experiences where I'm just like, well, it was good.
Yeah.
It was, but it wasn't what I am capable of. But I don't know if 10 years I was capable of what I'm doing today, too. So why am I sitting around taking away that joy? I still get to critique it because I want to be masterful in my own craft.
Mm, absolutely.
But that does not mean that there isn't good.
You can't hold a high school theater theater class to the same standard that you hold, you know, I've got to see the touring version of whatever, you know, I mean, you can't, that obviously can't be the same,
and
but
in
that
the last
is,
couple
you
know, of weeks, somewhere. I have been shocked that some of the local fare has been better than the professional touring fare. So there's also,
hello.
So I have also really, I've enjoyed part of that swing back, and so I talked to my sort of music director person in my life, my sort of musical muse, which is Kevin Bogan, and him and I have conversations a lot. I just trust him. I learned from him at a very young age how to, like, look at things. And him and I talk about, you know, because I often think that sometimes church choirs are some of the most painful things on the face of the earth. And, like, just sometimes. But then, as Kevin said, who are you to tell them that if they want to sing to God that their voice shouldn't be heard? And I'm just like, and I'm just like, well, yes.
Well, yeah.
Of course.
Of course. And in that moment, he's just like, shouldn't we allow them to do that? And I was like,
yeah.
Yes.
Everybody has a right to their art.
I will not be purchasing the CD, but yes, absolutely.
We'll sing out, sing proud. So one of my last questions for you as we're wrapping up, see how quickly this starts to happen.
Gosh.
What is a misconception of your profession that you think that the world hears whenever you explain what you do on a daily basis?
That it's not hard work. Mm-hmm. I'm just naturally talented. We put in a shit ton of work as artists. Yes. I lost the ability to write on natural talent like 5 years ago. Mm. So like, if not more than that. So, I think a lot of people believe that artists are just naturally amazing what they do, and they just put their creative energy, and all of a sudden it's mm-hmm. awesome. But no, it takes so much hard work, and I wish more people would understand that I'm not just coming out here and like goofing off with my time, but that I'm putting my all into everything.
Do you think that comes with the misconception that art isn't a valued profession? You know, that people think, well, you're just doing it because you are. It's the easy thing to do, and not that you wake up every morning and can't do anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely true. I think it's specific a lot of the time to the United States that mm-hmm. we don't value the arts, and that we look at artists as people who are not to be taken seriously. Not that everything in life has to be taken seriously, but I just, I get from a lot of people like, oh, what's your backup? What, mm-hmm. And I'm like, there is no backup. This is it. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
If I'm not doing this, I'm hungry.
Right. Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'm putting as much work into this as a doctor would put into...
Right, well, and I think that's the thing, too, is that there's no traditional way of proving that you've worked hard. Like, it's, you know what I mean, where it's like, I went to 7 years of school. Well, you don't have to do that, but that doesn't mean that my continuing education doesn't happen every day. It's just not the same as I'm in driving in school debt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
My continuing education, actually, and I have this conversation about a lot of professions, I'm never not continuing my education.
Yes.
I am still taking acting, dance, and voice lessons or directing classes mm-hmm. or going practicing. To learn all the time.
Right.
And constantly learning on the job, too.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think...
Sink or swim.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, we should be clear that I don't want my surgeon to learn on the job.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I hope you do learn something with every surgery you do. Like,
but I hope that they go back and have to take a refresher course.
I agree, yes. And that they have to do... Yeah, I mean, a lot of professions have required continuing education. It's just that it's very... I think people don't see that because of the way we have to do it as artists. It's not seen as traditional, therefore it's not as valid. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's not the same.
Or we're changing the game. Orchestrations have to get smaller sometimes because you can't afford a big mm-hmm. band anymore. Mm-hmm. Or a set, I can't do 55 different sets for full Monty. What am I going to do?
What am I going
to do? I have to streamline and work some shit around. Like,
I have $3,000 to put up a show. What can I do?
Do with this that doesn't give any importance to one side? Because you need music, you know. Mm-hmm. I always try to say in my musicals or in my plays that after the orchestration and after, you know, the sets, or not the sets, but the blocking is done, once mm-hmm. the music and the acting is done, in theory you should be able to open up the show without costumes, without lights, without that in a way. Then from that point you get to build it, but your initial world cannot rely upon the tech aspects that can go away.
Oh, absolutely.
So I just say, there's sometimes I wish I could just open a musical before you get to, like, mm-hmm. all of the mm-hmm. lights and this and all of that, just to say, it's there.
It's in a very special spot when it's just the actors still. And I say just the actors.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Of course, Like, they're... It's definitely really cool to see people create an entirely new world with just each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a lighting designer that will come in and change the entire feeling of the moment. And you're like, that's what was missing.
Yeah.
Like, you also just get those too, you know? Like, it's just fascinating. I love theater arts.
It's so cool.
Last question?
Only one more? That's so sad.
I know. Let's see. If you had a superhero power, what would it be?
Ooh. I think I just had this conversation with somebody the other day. But it was a joke, and my original answer was the ability to write any bill into law. But mm-hmm. but I think my true answer,
Don't you already think you have one?
Oh, what, do you think I have one?
I think everyone has a superpower.
Oh,
this
I don't know.
This is how tangents on accident. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Is my superpower? Ooh.
Yeah, and then I'll give you one in another question. What do you think your current superpower is?
My current superpower? That's a really hard question to answer. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say my ability to synthesize music is my superpower. And I don't mean to sound, like, big-headed about that, but I think that's just how my brain operates. And I feel lucky to have the mind that I do for it, because it's kind of just already there in my head. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, then I'm going to give you a superpower. You're invisible for 24 hours.
Oh!
What do you do with your 24 hours and, like, travel and all of that? You can just instantly be wherever you need to
be. But what do you do with those 24 hours?
Being invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Impeach Donald Trump?
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you a kind of a cop-out answer, but I think I would choose to not be invisible because I would want to live my life exactly how I would live it. Mm-hmm. All not right. Invisible.
No, that's a great answer.
Damn, that's a great answer.
That's a great answer. Thank you.
That is not a cop-out.
No, not at all.
That is not a cop-out. So last question. Who would you like to hear from on the couch? Who
should we interview?
And I think you're the official, like, first person.
Recommended one.
Because Bree said you last week, and then I was like, we're going to do Addie next. So, like, we already kind of had a plan, but it was like, oh, look at this. It actually worked that way.
You should interview Randy Jackson, my stage manager.
I'm gonna say him.
Mm-hmm.
I did. Like, wish I would have had an envelope right here. Like, that's her answer.
That's her answer. He will give you the time of your life on this podcast.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Randy, we're coming for you.
That's right.
So thank you for being on the show, my friend.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to see the show. Like,
come see it.
When this episode airs, it will be opening night of Lizzie.
That's right.
So next week, we will talk about how that went and maybe some exciting things coming up.
That's right.
Hell yeah. Come see some murders.
Come see a murderous and learn a little bit of something about a story you might have known, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so excited to see this movie.
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm so excited for everybody to see it.
Well, that was Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
All right, okay. We'll see you later. Bye-bye. And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in next week to see who we've got on the couch. New episodes are available in the KC area on KOJH 104.7 Thursdays at 2 p.m. or on iTunes. Bye.